Good evening. Good evening, everybody. Do not pay attention to what's behind the curtain, because I am the great and powerful wizard of fan experience, Mike Kados here, and my co-host over there, Rick. How we doing?
Doing well, Mike. Love the magic. You make things disappear. It's amazing, man. You got Houdini right in front of us.
Yeah. We had a special guest right before the Donnie. Good to see you.
What's up, Donnie? Good to see you.
Special guest right before curtain there. You know, my little one is she's up and about over here, and kind of like, you know, the daughters, and they want to get involved in everything, right?
Yeah.
We'll tell you what to do or whatnot, you know. And yesterday was the Tampa Bay Super Bowl parade, boat parade for Correct. Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. And you have Tom Brady on a boat, and he's holding the $10,000 Lombardi trophy. Something that he's held six times before,
mm-hmm.
and just treating it like a piece of junk. You know, he's winding up to throw it 20 feet onto the boat behind them. And you got his daughter saying, "Daddy, no, don't do it." And he's like, just tosses it, not a care in the world. And luckily, no harm, no foul. You know, they caught it. Chris Godwin lost his phone. His phone went overboard.
That's somewhere in the water.
But hey, what's a phone, right? You know, a couple hundred bucks, all good. I mean, as long as the $10,000 Lombardi trophy didn't sink to the bottom of the ocean there or whatever it is. And they look like they had a blast. Gronkowski was dancing up a storm like he's done before. But for the first time in a bathing suit, because they haven't done that in New England. But did you see Brady, getting carried,
stumbling out of there,
Oh man! All right, your thoughts, Rick?
Yeah, I mean, look, the guys won the seventh Super Bowl. Gronk's won his fourth, and most of those guys on that team have won one. So, I mean, when you're partying and you're having a good time, you're just having a good time. So you can't hate on that. So, congratulations again to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and their Super Bowl. I gotta say, though, I saw him throw that. I mean, the form on that was pretty good, but if that thing would have fallen in there, like, you would have seen like 10 or 20 people just diving in there for the trophy. That would have been incredible.
Oh man.
And then, listen, Brady had his tequilas. Apparently he's a tequila guy. He was drinking his tequilas. I hope he had something greasy, like a Popeye's chicken sandwich or like a Chick-fil-A or a Big Mac or something after all that to, kind of be able, as our good friend Donnie, he's a Bucks fan. He's one of the nine who predicted the Bucks. Absolutely.
Yes, cheers. He was.
It was a good time. Guys living it up. Listen, when you're on top of the world, man, and you you're the greatest of all time when it comes to football, and you're in the, pantheon of athletes, why not? And it humanizes him a little bit. Like, people see Brady having a good time, getting bomb, partying. It's relatable. Now us mm-hmm. as Jet fans, we don't like Brady. I don't want to hear it, but it's what it is. You got to give props where it's due. So congratulations to him enjoying his Super Bowl party. He's going to have knee surgery in a couple of days, from what I hear. Some cleanup.
Yeah, he tore his knee from the
toss. Yeah,
the toss, the Lombardi toss.
But so it was fun to see. I mean, it was just what can you say? A great performance. And they weren't wearing masks over there. Social distancing and mask apparently are.
Social distancing, be damned on the
be damned board. Masks, be damned, which was kind of disappointing, because you're the face of the league, set the example, man. But listen, what are you gonna do? It's just what it is. Congratulations to them, and now we move on from football to baseball, Mike, where pitchers and catchers are reporting in a couple of days, right?
Pitchers and catchers started reporting today, actually.
Today,
But Yeah, it's baseball. You know, baseball is right around the corner. Obviously, we got some NHL, NBA. And NBA. But I want to touch on the big news that we received here in New York, because, you know, on the same day that Tampa Bay is flying high and, you know, not a care in the world, or, you know, they're just celebrating, we have a reason to celebrate, you know, right now, because since last March, nobody in New York was allowed to go to a sporting event. Buffalo Bills in the playoffs excluded, because they did it open it up for a little bit there. But Governor Cuomo, he announced that 10% capacity at the arenas and the stadiums. And it looks like, you know, Yankee Stadium and Citi Field are going to have fans for opening day. And, you know, you got the Knicks, the Nets, and our hockey teams, you know, gonna have fans starting February 23rd. And I was listening to the Nets on the radio, and they were talking about that they're doing mail-in tests a couple of days before the game for anyone that has tickets, and then rapids at the door. So I wonder what, you know, when the Mets and the Yankees are going to do as far as that goes too.
They'll probably have some testing procedures when you get to the game, maybe like a rapid test when you get there, and then get you into the stadium. But look, this is a good thing for New York, man. We're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, we're starting to see we're coming out of this. You know, I think they announced today they bought like another 200 million vaccines that they'll be able to distribute by the end of the spring. People are getting, you know, vaccinated about a million and a half people a day. Citi Field just opened up for a mass vaccination center. So you got Yankee Stadium, you got Citi Field. I mean, you're going to have probably some relief package passed in the next month that'll get more vaccinations out. So that's a good thing. People are going to get shots in arms. And before you know it, man, I think we're going to be in stadiums, a lot more people in stadiums, and we're going to be eating hot dogs and drinking beers. I think, you know, this year's World Series isn't going to be like a bubble site or something like that. I think there's going to be, you know, 20,000, 30,000. I think we're going to have full houses in there, people watching games. So this is a good thing, man. I mean, this is really good for the city because we need it. And I think it's good for the country that we're sort of starting to climb out of this ditch that we're in. So it's good news. I'm looking forward for us to go into a game. I mean, I'll go to Citi Field. I have no problem. I'll go to Yankee Stadium. Obviously, I'm a Yankee fan, but I guess our first stop would have to be Citi Field, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's where it all started, right?
That's where it all started.
Fan experience technically all started at Citi Field.
So we got to bring a table out there. We got to bring our laptops. We got to bring the banner. The ring lights,
the parking lot, whatever it's called now.
Isn't it Caesars Lounge or something like that?
I don't think it's Caesars anymore. I think
they changed it.
All right. I think somebody else is the sponsor of it. I mean, we're talking, you know, 2009. Met there, right?
11 years ago. Yeah.
I think it's different over there now, but who knows? It could very much still be the Caesars Lounge. But so we definitely need to get out to a couple of games this year, a
couple of tailgates,
and go out there and see you guys, see you fans and you Facebook users.
Count me in. There we go.
You are counted in.
You are counted in, Facebook user. You are counted in.
So, man, but
and the Mets are going to have a good team this year. So that's even great. And so are the Yankees. So it's great for the
city. Yeah. And the Mets are in talks right now, starting trade talks back up with Chris Bryant, also got some trade talks for Matt Chapman of the Oakland Athletics.
There you go.
So let's see what plays out. And, you know, like we said, be on pitchers and catchers is starting to report now. And, you know, it's right around the corner. It's going to be here before we know it.
I'm excited, man. We need some spring and some summer. It's cold outside, dude. I love the winter. I'm done with this, man. Like, I woke up this morning, it was snowing. I mean, just enough. Mm-hmm. No more.
No, absolutely. All right. We'll talk a little bit more after our next guest. Right now joining us he's a triathlete and a traumatic brain injury survivor and activist. Joining us now, please help us in welcoming Eric Esposito. Eric, how are we?
Oh, good, guys. Better than you. I don't have any snow.
That's for sure.
So where are you? Ohio? Where are you?
I'm in Atlanta. So when it snows, we shut down.
Yeah, so I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
and it just know when it's over.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. There was Snowmageddon, I think it was 2013. I worked outside of the city, so it was a reverse commute. And everybody knew it was coming at about 1 o'clock, but everybody worked into the last possible second. And I'm like, oh, this is nothing. I'm from Ohio, you know, I'll be fine. Well, yeah. Even though I know how to drive in the snow, that means nobody else does. So I'm in gridlock traffic and I have like 10 more miles to get to my apartment in the middle of town. So I knew they weren't going to ticket me that day. So I drove illegally in the carpool lane all the way home and everybody else sat in the middle on a, you know, gridlock. So I was the smart one.
Smart play.
Yep.
Absolutely. Mike, you there? You freeze? What happened over there? Looks like Mike is – oh, yeah, there he is. Okay.
I froze for a second there. So I didn't get the Snowmageddon story in full, but it's all good. It's all good. So you're in Atlanta now, but you were born and raised in Ohio, right? And you grew
Youngstown.
Okay. And you grew up did you grow up a Steelers fan? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that play out? How did you become a fan of the Steelers?
Well, all right, if you drew a line between Cleveland and Pittsburgh, Youngstown falls right in the middle. So the area is splitting between, and my father's a Steelers fan, so he kind of laid claim to me when I was born. Yeah. My grandfather's a Browns fan. He's like, well, I got the next one. So that's why my brother went that way.
Okay.
They're only now beginning to become happy.
Yeah. Yeah. 20 years of misery, right? Yeah. It's crazy.
How did that game play out in your family, you know, with the Steelers and the Browns putting on that, well, what started out as an ass whooping, but it turned out to be, you know, a very close game towards the end.
So, well, first of all, I live across the street from the Steelers bar in Atlanta, which was just dumb luck when I bought my place. But I haven't been there. I haven't been there because of COVID. So yeah. I have to stream the game through like an online betting site. And to back up even further, this all started with a picture of my brother sending me a picture of a gambling ticket from some casino in Vegas. $200 on the Steelers. We don't have half our team and our coach. I'm like, I said, man, I've seen Tim Tebow beat the Steelers. Stranger shit has happened. Don't be surprised if you win. So, and then I, you know, after the game's over, I'm like, you lost $200. How does that feel? He's like, pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I mean, I had a feeling that it could happen. And honestly, Pittsburgh had like no run game the whole second half of the year. So yeah. You know, it wasn't that surprising to me.
Yeah, I think how it started out surprised me a little bit. I definitely thought the Browns had a shot, but I didn't think it was going to come out the way it did, without a doubt.
Well, you know, I mean, you're asking 39-year-old Ben Roethlisberger to sling it 50 times, and, you know, like Shaq said about Jordan, 39 ain't 29.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you also, you're growing up in Ohio, you're a fan of the Ohio State, the Indians, the Cavs. You know, talk to us a little bit about, you know, I guess that Ohio State game a couple weeks ago, you know, and what are your thoughts on Justin Fields too? Because we're Jets fans and, you know, there's rumblings on, you know, Justin Fields, or maybe they're going to go a different route.
So are you looking to ruin another quarterback? Is that what you're trying to say?
Oh, man.
or is another quarterback going to ruin the Jets?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Fields is – it would be a good choice for where you're picking at, but, you know, you just kind of have to put a support system around them and actually, you know, have good management. So it's not bad. As for the game itself, I was slightly surprised, but then again, it's just, you know, they were so dominant. Bama was, and it's, you know, living in the South, it is definitely Bama flags everywhere, even in Atlanta. And it's the SEC. They're entitled down here. They think they're the best no matter what. But, you know, despite, you know, having only six games this season, I was kind of, you know, surprised about that. He had a better game than I thought he was going to have after seeing what's happened in the Northwestern game. So,
yeah. Eric, thanks for coming on tonight. You know, you grew up in Youngstown, Ohio. A lot of great you know, athletes have grown up in there. Who was, I mean, Ray Mancini, I think Kelly Pavlik was a boxer, was over there. A lot of people. Who were some of the people that you looked up to as growing up in Youngstown as far as athletes go?
So this is kind of funny, haha, but I was in high school at the same time with Maurice Clarett. He was always interesting. We went to the same high school. We were 2 years apart.
Okay. What was that like?
You know, I think we had one class together, and it was strength and conditioning. So all we did was lift. But it was kind of like watching him play was – it's just how it's always been described, where you just hand him the ball, and next thing you know, he's already in the end zone. It wasn't even fair. And, you know, coming up – like after he left, the year after me was year below me was Mario Manningham.
He went to he was a Youngstown guy too? Mario.
Huh?
He was a Youngstown guy too? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I went to Warren Harding for high school.
Okay.
So I went a little bit further because they wanted me to swim for them.
Yeah.
So I went there, and we happened to be a pretty big football school. They always pump out people to the Big Ten or Ohio State, or definitely, you know, the second tier recruits always end up in the MAC somewhere.
Okay. That's good. And when did you start the running, the sort of triathlete kind of training and like competition? Was that at a younger age, or was that a little, when you get a little older? Or?
I was a swimmer growing up, and then through high school, and then in college I converted to a water polo player for my freshman year until I transferred back in state because I partied too much, so I had to come back in state. But I didn't get into the triathlon thing until 2014 because I took almost a 10-year hiatus from being in the pool. I was coaching a master swim team in Atlanta at the time, and some of the swimmers were triathletes, and they were like, "You got to try this triathlon." You know, I got and for 2 years I said, "Nah, don't worry about it." Until I finally caved and I did it. You got to catch the bug after that, or you never want to do another one.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's a new way of life because you have all the training that you have to do to get into it. So you know, talk to us a little bit about the first time getting into a triathlon.
Man, it was so I was dating this girl at the time, and
there's always a girl involved, right?
yeah. I'm like, hey, I'm gonna do this, and it was at the end of triathlon season. I decided to do it in July. It's like, well, you know, I'm starting to get towards the end because you only have a certain amount of weather, you know, depending on where you're at to deal with, because it's got to be relatively warm for the swim. And, you know, you could deal with a little bit cooler temperatures on the bike and the run. So I'm like, hey, I signed up for one in October, but I had to go to Tallahassee. I said, I signed up for that because, you know, your sister's down there. We can crash with her. She's like, yeah. 4 weeks before the race, we break up. I'm like, well, fuck, I don't have any place to stay. So I'm like, going all the way to Tallahassee, which is like, I don't really care for the town. It's kind of boring. And you drive – when you're driving through cotton fields, like, because it's cotton blooming season in, like, October, and it's just blowing everywhere. Like, wow, I kind of understand why what happened in the – you know, back in that 1800s, what I did. You could never, you know, do all this with shorthanded people here. Like, there's just so much cotton everywhere when you drive through it, and it's relatively boring. But, and then I did that race. I'm like, oh, well, this is pretty cool. And then I just upgraded my bike, and I just went in head first the next year.
Awesome. And whatchamacallit? So I want to touch on this before we obviously go into it a little bit more. But I see here that it's very common – to pee in your suit during a triathlon?
It depends when, and not everybody kind of can do it. So first of all, like, if it's a wetsuit legal race, I'll stand there and I'll pee in my wetsuit while I'm talking to you, and you'll never be another wiser. I'll get that last bit out. But you can also do it while you're riding the bicycle too. That takes a little bit more skill and concentration. It's hard for me to do, but you know, most people will get off and do it during the course at one of the like at the porta potties and stuff. But if you're faster, you know, like the pros, they will pee on the bike. So, I mean, it's not like if you watch the France for cyclists, they'll actually just whip it out and just start going while they're pedaling. They'll put their arm on the support vehicle so they can have some, but they don't have to pedal and do it. And they'll just whip it out and pee. And they'll, you know, the interesting thing about the Tour de France is, you know, the kind of the leaders, they determine when everybody takes a pee break. So it's literally a group peloton pee at the same time. So, yeah. Triathlon works a little bit differently because it's an individual thing, but we all pee on the bike at some point.
Wow.
Some mechanics won't work on your bike unless they bag the seat for that reason.
I could definitely see it more in the swimming portion. You know, that makes more sense to me, but damn, on the bike, yeah, that's crazy. That's just funny. Yeah. I never knew that until, you know, I was taking a
you
deep
do now.
Rick. Yeah, so I want to get into a lot of the work that you do. You have a small media company, but you're also into traumatic brain injury and all that. So tell us, obviously you have a tremendous story. If you can just share that with our viewers a little bit of how that all took place and how you're involved in that.
Yeah, I mean, it all goes back to, well, it was a week after Ironman Chattanooga. I didn't have a bad race, but it was my third Ironman. So a week after, I decided, I'm like, well, I'm going to do some off-season, you know, bike commuting to work instead of – so I can get extra miles in. Well, I had started a new job before Chattanooga. Then I went on health insurance October 1st, and then I got hit October 5th.
Wow.
And that's what caused – yeah, by I think it was either Explorer or Tahoe, some large SUV. It was rather painful. And that's how I got my traumatic brain injury from that. Yep. And then, you know, I had been writing – and my blog for over a year at that point, I just continued to write on that and started writing, you know, a book about my daily experiences and just kept going a bit further with that. And, you know, eventually when COVID hit, I had just been through another relationship who, by the way, I heard earlier in a podcast, she's a Yankees fan. So I watched a lot of Yankees games while I was home. Western girl. Yeah. So all the Yankees games. And so I just got out of that. I'm like, well, with COVID, I didn't have anything to do. I wasn't training. So I just started doing more of the YouTube thing. And that kind of just took off. You know, I think I've got about 4,000 subscribers in 10 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it is, considering I'm just an ordinary white guy with brain damage. So, you know, I mean, I'm not a pro, I'm not a celebrity, so I think it's gone pretty well so far. But it's helped a lot of people, so it's just kind of taking it day by day to see what direction this goes in. Because, you know, I'm 35, and I never thought this is where I'd be, but maybe it's where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's an incredible story. And the people that reach out to you, are they people from all walks of life? Are they people who are going through the same things that you've been through, different situations? Like, tell us about some of the people you've been able to help.
It's been all walks of life. You know, I remember when I first started like opening up to the world, there was a guy on Reddit who reached out to me and, he said, he was a gay guy. He said, my partner just recently suffered a severe traumatic brain injury. He's like, I'm on the outside. You know, I'm not his medical proxy. That's his family. We don't really have any relationship. They're not really fond of gay people and everything. She's like, I don't know what to do. I said, man, like, I was like, whoa. I'm like, I don't know if I'm in over my head. But like, that was like my first exposure to people like wanting to know, what would I do? What have I done? What, you know, how can you help me? And it's like, wow. And then, you know, there's other people who I've just connected with, like cancer survivors or, you know, amputees or some, you know, there's always something that,
right,
you know, even though we didn't go through the same experiences, there's a lot of common elements that we can bond over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That Mike, you want to go?
Yeah. It's great that, you know, you're putting yourself out there and you're letting people, you know, come to you, you know, people that just, you know, really don't understand, you know, what's going on. And I saw today, you know, that you're trying to set up, you know, a bigger production and you launched like a GoFundMe recently. You want to tell our viewers about that?
Yeah. Well, part of it was to, you know, my brain injury support group is self-funded. So I kind of wanted to do that to see if I could use my platform to kind of help them cover their, you know, their expenses, which is low operating costs and everything. So I figured, like, okay, with my ad revenue from my YouTube channel, that should help, you know, stuff like that. And people had suggested to me when I had talked to them, you should start a GoFundMe too. You know, whenever I talk to them, I don't ask anybody for money. If they want to contribute, that's what it's there for. Mm-hmm. But I realized, you know, we're in some crazy economic and pandemic times. So I don't ever ask anybody for anything. And if they feel like they want to, they can. But, you know, I started using that and to kind of investing a little bit back more into the channel to try to reach more people and go from there.
Yeah. And so talk to us a little bit about, you know, after the accident, you know, how long did it take for you to get back on your feet? And then how long was it till you started really, you know, trying to practice and trying to get back into shape to go back to being a triathlete before COVID hit, obviously?
The athlete part, I'm going to say it came back quicker, but I got into it quicker. You know, I started training again within a few weeks. It was slow. Obviously, it was painful because the only bone I broke in the accident was one of my fingers. So in that aspect, I got lucky. But with a brain injury, you know, that's the thing with other people. They can't see it. So they don't really know what you're going through. And you know, when you have a brain injury, it's like speaking a different language than everybody else. Between me and my ex-fiance, it was like we weren't on the same page because she didn't understand what I was trying to convey. And I couldn't find a way to tell her. So that's how it was with pretty much everybody, you know, other than like a counselor and stuff. You're going to have to refresh me. What was the original question? Because I get lost like this a lot now.
That's fine. Yeah. No, just, you know, how long it took for you to get back on your feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, like with my mental health and everything, it took about two and a half years before I really started to make a lot of progress. You know, there was a lot of changes that had to be made in my life. Mm-hmm. And adjustments to kind of really foster a lot of healing and growth again until I figured stuff out. And ironically, it started to really kind of come together after the ex and I separated. I don't want to say that. But I mean, you know, it was that, and I had been trying to work. I'm an architect, but I'm not a functional architect anymore. I wasn't able to do my career, and I kept trying to make it work and trying and trying, and it just wasn't happening. And so once we kind of moved on from that, finally, it's like I eliminated the big stressors because, you know, trying to do something that you're no longer physically capable of doing and having that weigh on your mind and that weighs on your relationship and all that stress, with all that gone, then I was able to make a lot more progress. So that came back after two and a half years. Now, actually the athletic stuff, you know, I ran a marathon 5 months after the accident. It wasn't pretty. It was ugly. It hurt, but I still ran it because I had paid for the race. And I said, I ain't getting this money back, so I'm going to run it. But I mean, you know, that first year, 2018, I had a lot of issues with PTSD because when I got hit, I saw it coming. It was head on. So that gave me a lot of issues.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, coming about 50 miles an hour too. So it was moving. So, that gave me a lot of PTSD issues that I didn't really get through until the 2019 season. Mm-hmm. And then I was doing better and I was in better shape then. And unfortunately, you know, with COVID, I took like 7 months off to work on all these other things and try to, you know, do different projects. And I'm just getting back into it. Now, my first race this year is going to be in about 5 weeks. So I'm going to head down to Miami.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
That's great. You know, I want to get back to the work you do on YouTube. Do you feel that, I mean, why did you put yourself out there? Was it something you wanted to share with everybody? Is it something you felt that you had to talk about? I mean, what was it that drove you to do that? You know?
Well, so I mean,
obviously from COVID and stuff like that, but you know.
Yeah. You know, other than the need to connect with people, but you know, because my ex and I weren't really on the same page, and, you know, I'm not going to go too much into it, but, you know, I had felt alone through that first two and a half years. I didn't really have anybody to relate to. Nobody really understood me. And, you know, once I started to get better, I realized I don't want anybody else to ever feel like that. And you start searching YouTube for stuff like that. I come up and you realize, you know, I'm not alone out there. There are people like me who have gone through stuff like that. And that makes me feel better knowing that what I've been through can help someone else feel better and know that this isn't, they're not the only ones going through this.
That's incredible. No, that's an incredible story. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. Yeah. And so you're running your, now you're running a triathlon down there in Miami. Like what type of race are you going to take part in?
It's a half Ironman. So it's a 1.2 mile swim, 56 mile bike, and a 13.1 mile run.
So for our viewers who are interested in being triathletes, what kind of training goes into this? Like, I mean, do you get up at like 4 a.m. and train for like 3 hours? Like what goes into it?
You know, a lot of it is based on what kind of time do you have available? I mean, for a 70.3, that's what a half Ironman is.
70.3 miles?
It's total.
Oh, you know, total.
That's
okay. Okay.
That's if
okay,
you add up those three sports.
Yeah. Yeah.
For that.
Oh, it's total. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Ironman is 140.6 naturally. So that makes for a long day. If you're doing an Ironman, if you want to be a competitive Ironman, man, you're looking at least 18 hours of training a week. So it's like a part-time job. And, you know, for a half Ironman, I'm at about 15 hours a week. So. Oh,
man, that is incredible work. I mean, I try to go to the gym for 40 minutes and I'm like complaining.
So
I don't lift weights, man. I don't lift weights.
You gotta stay limber. So what's your daily routine? Like you get up and you run how long? You swim how long? You bike how long? Talk to us about your daily routine.
So I mean, every day is a little bit different. You know, like on Mondays I'll do about an hour and a half ride. Tuesdays are usually a swim in the morning. I'll go up to LA Fitness, get in 2,000, 3,000 yards, which is about 45 minutes. Then I'll have a run later. Wednesdays, it's like it's called a brick workout where you do a bike and then a run, and it's usually like an hour and a half and then run for an hour. Thursdays are another run day. Fridays are a swim and a bike day. And then weekends are the long bike ride where I'm riding for like 3 hours. And doing like a half an hour run after that. And, you know, let's see, Sunday. It's the last day. Yeah, last day of the week. that's usually about a 2 hour run.
Wow. That's incredible, man. That is absolutely incredible.
I just feel super lazy right now.
Yeah, right?
Damn.
That's not for everybody, you know?
Yeah. No, but can I at least do a, you know, maybe a, like a. A little bit of that, just a tad bit. You know, I need to get better at it. I want to, you know, I want to start.
Google
you know,
5K.
I want to. Yeah, no, I did a couple of 5Ks a couple years back, and you know, I started to get into some kind of a mode, like you know, where I would you know go out and I would run like 3 miles, you know, every other morning or whatnot, and then I, you know, it. Started to you know become more natural, but then you know just life came at me and I was just I had to stop doing it one morning and then it just led to not doing it another and
yeah and you have to take my training thing with a grain of salt because I'm single with no kids and you have to add more responsibilities and obligations, your time to train decreases, so you kind of have to deal with that.
Yeah, I got the kids, and that's really what you know. One of the biggest things working against me, but it's still not an excuse. Like you know, I still gotta get out there and do it. But in due time, that's my plan. Definitely to do some 5Ks. I don't even want to run a marathon. I know I don't want to do that route. Yeah. But biking I could probably do.
Just know that bikes are expensive, man. It's a lot more expensive than you realize.
Yeah, they're like $1,000, man. They're crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I got a Schwinn. It was like $300, but you know, that's.
Yeah, all I was gonna say, if you get one on Craigslist, if it sounds too good to be true, it's hot. Don't buy it.
Now, what about your bike? Is you got the one with like the fat wheels or the really skinny ones?
I have two bikes. I got a road bike and a tri bike. So I have different wheel sets to put on. But yeah, I have the carbon wheels that are the fatter ones.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I want to get back to, you mentioned after your accident you had PTSD. I mean, for people who are going through that, what's that experience like? I mean, when you got on that bike, was it you just like so anxiety? I mean, what were you going through when you were dealing with that?
So after I got hit, I switched to riding indoors on my Wahoo Kicker using a program called Zwift. It's kind of like a mm-hmm. video game, except for you're not actually doing anything interesting. So I did that until my first race, which was in Panama City Beach, and it was a half Ironman. So I had not been on the road until then.
Wow.
And it's not a closed course. It's the bike course goes out on this highway into the middle of nowhere. You go past a dog track and you ride on the middle of nowhere, but it's not a closed course. So you do have cars that come by at 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And I was pretty nervous and I had a death grip on my handlebars or aero bars. And like, if there was a loud noise, I probably could have ripped them off if I turned my head. Wow. So that was very nerve wracking, especially when, you know, the cars would go by, but it was worse that the second race I did about a month and a half later, because there was an ambulance on the course that they and it would happen. It was really weird because I'm in the middle of nowhere in Northeast Georgia riding for this race, and it kind of froze me. It's like I didn't know what to do, and the cop is at the intersection. She's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Yeah." So I was there for about 10 minutes before I could ride again. So it took a lot of counseling to kind of work through all that.
Uh-huh. That's tough. And did you do a lot of counseling as you were recovering? I mean, was that a big part of your recovery, talking to people and all that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got to get a counselor that you can build a kind of a rapport with. You know, if you don't really have a rapport, then you're kind of just spinning your wheels and not getting anywhere. I still go like on a monthly basis now. When I was, my brain was like scrambled eggs. I was going like every week. So, I mean, I had a lot of stuff to unpack, to work through. And but it does help. I mean, I advocate it for everybody. You know, doesn't it go every other month or something to work your shit out? Whatever.
Yeah. whatever works for everybody. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So, you know, obviously with the mental and the PTSD aspect of everything, you went seeked counseling. Were there any like actual brain exercises that you were given to, you know, help, you know, just try to, you know, restart that part, you know, of where you were injured?
Yeah, there were different things in therapy, but like the thing I found the most helpful with was just kept writing. I wrote and I wrote and wrote. Nobody wanted to read my damn text messages because I wrote so much. It was exercising my brain, kind of rehab, just writing so much. And that's why, like, in 2020, I think I wrote 24 original articles, and I just kept writing and writing, and it helped me get a lot better.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. And so I watched a couple of the vlogs that you had. So the main things that you lost were memory, math, and emotions, or
whatever. Processing speed. My processing speed was slow, and then I had a lot of problems with emotion control. For some reason, everything just came out as anger. Like, that was the only thing that I could express. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was confused, it was anger. When I was happy, I still yelled. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I can't control it. I just don't know. Like, it's different up here, and it's just not coming out the same way.
Yeah.
So that was the difficult part, because when you're living with someone, and they can't quite get a read on you, and you really can't explain it, and you're like talking all the way up here. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So were there also certain memories that, you know, that you just lost completely, or did it take a while to, you know, to gain, you know, some kind of memory back, you know, like a selective amnesia or whatever, you know? Talk to us about that.
It wasn't long-term stuff. It's all been short-term. Which is more difficult than long-term. You know, I remember, you know, most of those things before the accident. And it's the stuff after, like remembering a list or instructions. That was what made part of it being an architect is you're telling me to do all this stuff, and I can't remember, you know, two-thirds of what you just told me to do, and it's not going to work out very well. And the fact that I'm not working as fast as I used to, you're probably going to want to go find someone else that you could pay to do the job at the speed and remember everything you told them.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. So where do you want to where do you want to take your blog and your YouTube? Where do you want to go now? How far do you want? Where do you want to see it expanding? Like, how big do you want to take your what you're doing on YouTube and all that?
I honestly don't know, but I know I'm going to reach this point to where I've taken it as far as one man can take it. And then I got to figure out if it's possible to go any further, if I could get people to help me with certain stuff that comes with actually generating income to pay people, you know, rather than donate it. So it becomes, you know, a process of, you know, I got to realize, you know, is this as far as a one brain damaged person could take it? Because I don't want to overload myself. Because
Of course, yeah.
It's just an awareness type project for me, and it's not a full time job. And I just don't want to, you know, stack too much on my plate for me to finish. So I've just tried to keep things manageable.
Yeah, definitely, man. And you're doing great work. I mean, you're such a champion, just an advocate for this. This is great. I gotta ask. So after you run a triathlon, all those miles, all that road work, what's the favorite go-to meal? Is it a burger, a pizza? Like, what is it?
Pizza.
Okay.
How's the pizza down there in Atlanta?
We got Mellow Mushroom, and the other one that was local by my house was St. Angelo's, which was good. But I remember after my first Ironman, I did it in Ohio. When I came home that day, I had purposely not ate anything since the end of the race because there's this place called the Hot Dog Shop, and it is, you know, horrible for you. However, it is delicious. It is well known. And I got like 20 some hot dogs of two family fries. Mom's like, did you bring home stuff for us? I'm like, no, I ate it on the way home, and it was a half an hour drive. Wow. So I ate all that. And I was like, I was just dying for that. I'm like, I'm getting this no matter what. I want this. So yeah, that was what I did for my first one.
Awesome. That's awesome, man.
So, you know, obviously you've done this in a lot of different places. What was your favorite?
Honestly, I love the city of Chattanooga. They really get behind all the races up there. I've raced 6 races there in the past 5 years. I love going up there even when it's not for races. But the thing is, whenever I pick places, it's a lot of these places I would never go otherwise. And I can find cool things to do no matter what. When we would go up there with friends or my ex would come, I would set up like we go to the mountains, a winery tour. I'll DD for everybody, and you know, everybody just drinks. Or I found I did a race in this town called Scottsboro, Alabama. It's kind of a hole in the wall. But like 10 years ago, I remember watching a TV show, seeing this store called Unclaimed Baggage. Here's a free plug for them. This is where all your luggage ends up. All your airport luggage that gets lost ends up here.
Okay.
And you can imagine we'll be there. You know, a surfboard, engagement rings, clothing. It all ends up there. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, this is it. This is something for us to do. So I'll find something wherever I go. But Chattanooga is definitely my favorite place, followed by Panama City.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. I feel like, well, I mean, my running expertise is very short-lived, but I feel like when I was, you know, running a little bit more, you know, you kind of enjoy, you know, other places a lot more because, you know, you sit there, you go for a run for like an hour and a half or a bike ride, and you can actually see, you know, everything the way it's meant to be seen and not just like inside and, you know, just really just wasting your time. So, I mean, the nature and just seeing everything out there, I think is very enjoyable. I definitely need to get back on that.
And all the court, or no matter where you go, all the courses offer different things. You know, I've been at ones where you ride, and most of them, you know, the run or the bike courses are kind of on the rural side, especially for the half Ironmans. So, you know, I write about my races, and you'll see stuff like when I was in Michigan, you see, you know,
you don't see the wineries that they claim on the website. I saw I'm right in the middle of nowhere, and I see like an Astro minivan that's rotted out for sale, stuff like that. You know, or later in the course, you're riding parallel to Lake Michigan. I'm like, oh, this is a this is nice. Or, you know, you're riding in the country where you either in between the ridges of mountains, and you're like, oh, this is cool. Or sometimes it could be just kind of as serene as you go past a field full of cows, you know? It's different.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to take it all in and just to have that, just, you know, nothing else in the world but, you know, you and nature, and, you know, all the different places obviously have something different to offer. Now, how about like other types of races? Have you ever, you know, done any of these like these Spartan races or any of these obstacle type races? Because we had, you know, somebody on a couple weeks ago, you know, she helped organize all those things. But have you ever done anything like that?
No, and I'll tell you why. I mean, I've known friends who've done them, and at some point in the race, you're going to bottleneck on some obstacle, and you're all just standing around doing nothing. I want to keep moving the entire time.
Gotcha. Eric, let me ask you this: is it like a small community, like triathlons? Do you run with a team, or is it like just a small community that does these races all over the country?
I race on a team, but we have certain races that most of us will race. Like a lot of us will go to Chattanooga to do the half or the full because it's close. And so it's kind of like a team race.
Yeah.
Or the same thing, one like in Gulf Coast and Panama City, stuff like that, or local races. But the triathlon community overall is not that big. You know, like 1% of people in the world have done a marathon. So think about that, how many fewer have done an Ironman. So it's not that big. And it also happens to be kind of an expensive sport. You know, you don't have to be rich to do it, but, you know, the more time invested in it, you're going to spend a lot more money. So it doesn't attract everybody. And, you know, minorities never really get into it for various reasons. Like, it just becomes it's known as kind of a rich white guy sport. Because that's what dominates the demographic at all these Ironman races. You got your guys between 40 and 50 with disposable income. And that's why the sport was dying for a little while. It wasn't getting growth because it was all older people. So numbers started to pick back up again. But, you know, it's still an older demographic. And it's harder to get young people in it because they don't have that kind of income to spend. You know, you've got student loans or stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's an expensive sport, and money I have invested in my bike is probably close to 10 grand. I would never be able to sell it for that, but you know, that's how much I've got invested in it. And that's not including all the routine maintenance I do on it every year.
Wow.
Wow. Have you ever taken your bike and went like, you know, across state lines or like just on a long bike ride? Just to go on a bike ride for, you know, a few hours, a day, whatever.
Well, so we're not saying about not a weekend training ride. We're going to exclude those, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because like weekend training rides for an Ironman are usually 5-6 hour rides or about 100 miles, and you're out in the middle of nowhere. I don't ever go just to ride. You know, it's always part of a training plan. But I like to, even though I got hit in the middle of Atlanta, I still like to ride on the, in town. You know, I could ride on this rails to trail trail called the Silver Comet. You could take that all the way out to Alabama, which is like, I think it's like 62 miles from the start to the border. I've never done that. I've never done that just for fun, but that's always an option. But a lot of, you know, I'll ride wherever. It doesn't really matter. But I've done century rides too with organized groups for fundraisers, so
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I was just saying, you have one.
No, I was just gonna say, where can people find you, like your Twitter handle, Instagram, website, or YouTube? Like, where can people go to find you, find inspiration, find where you can help them?
It's all Espo Swim Bike Run, ESPO, Swim Bike Run. And the website's just www.esposwimbikerun.com. So it's ever pretty easy.
Yeah.
And I answer pretty much most messages I have to set aside. That's the other part of the thing. Like when you get a lot of messages, you actually have to set aside like a a significant amount of time to answer people too. So
yeah. I could imagine.
Definitely. And you know, I appreciate, you know, I reached out a couple months ago, and yeah, obviously I appreciate you agreeing to come on, because you know, I really thought that the, you know, the story was something that, you know, I wanted our audience to, you know, at least
share
here and you know, share what you have going on, and if it helps anybody, you know, then, you know, that then we've done our job, just, you know, bringing that forward to everyone's attention. So, you know, real quick, you know, you're the expert with running and biking and whatnot. So if people looking to get a bike, or, well, actually, how many running shoes do you go through in like a year?
5 or 6.
And what is your shoe of choice?
I'm actually I'm running low. So I run in Pearl Azumis, but they dropped the run line in 2018. And so everybody scrambled to buy them up. And I found like a dozen pair on this one website. So I bought them all. But like I also wanted that in Saucony's. But I've got like a stockpile of shoes that I just go through. I run with like either 2 or 3 pairs that I rotate in a time. And I'll go through like 5 or 6 in a year, depending on, you know, if I do marathons that year, I'll go through like 7. So I'm hoping to qualify for Boston and maybe run New York one day. But it'll have to be when I take time off from triathlons, because it's really hard to train for both. The mileage to train for a marathon is pretty high. So
yeah,
a little bit different skills.
And what's the running length for the triathlon again?
About how many miles am I running every week?
Yeah. No, I mean like during the triathlon, what's the mileage?
For a full Ironman is 26.2, then 13.1 for a half, and for an Olympic it's a 10K, and for a sprint it's a 5K. But if you wanted me to give you advice for first time triathletes, it's don't sign up for an Ironman, sign up for a sprint. You don't want you want to know how they work first before you do it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to get hurt on the first one.
Yeah. And if, you know, you want to make a small investment, because you can do a sprint triathlon on a beach cruiser, a fat bike, whatever you got. Even the one you stole off your brother from, you know, in elementary school. You can do it on any bike, okay? And it's same thing with an Olympic. You can get away with that too. It's just when you start going up, then you got to get a little bit better quality bike. And you start to get into that money pit. If you do that sprint first, you learn a lot that first try. And you don't want to learn a lot on a big race.
Mm-hmm.
You feather that in as you go. So
yeah. No, I could definitely hear you on that. You know, definitely don't overextend yourself, because you'll pay for it in the long run for sure. But I definitely need to get back on that 5K. I'm not going into the. I'm not going anywhere past 5K. I don't see that in my future. But anybody that is out there that's watching right now, if they are interested, you know, just start small and work your way up.
Well, that's the thing. People, you know, perspective is different for everybody. You know, your guy who is a couch to 5K guy, 5K is an endurance event, whereas an Ironman is an endurance for me, and a 5K is a sprint. The perspective is different for every different person, and you just got to figure out what's in it for you, or how far do you want to take it?
Yeah. No, I know how far I want to take it. I want to take it. No, I might do a 10K. That's probably where I would, you know, tap out. You know, I would top out there in the 10K. But I actually like the obstacle course races, you know, and I understand what you're saying, you know, because people are just sitting there at an obstacle and you're sitting there and you're waiting. I mean, it gives me a chance to catch my breath, but that's because I need to, you know.
I got to keep moving until I cross the finish line. That's just how it is for me.
And completely understandable. I definitely hear you. I just, you know, some people like me, you know, need that little extra breather here and there.
Yeah.
Rick, you got any more?
No, that's great. I'm not a triathlete, man. I think I'd pass out if I tried that. 5Ks and those runs, I get up at like 5 in the morning. I try to just go to the gym and get a quick workout. But if anybody's interested in being a triathlete, reach out to Eric. Or want to start, or want advice, or just like anything, reach out to Eric, and you know, you'll be on your way.
You know, the day of an Ironman race day, you get up at about 2 a.m.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
And how long is it, you know, altogether? So you get up at 2 a.m. and what time are you getting home?
I mean, it depends how slow you are. You get 17 hours
average,
to do
average.
It. 17 average, hours. The average finisher is in around the 15-hour range, but you get 17 hours. And I mean, I've never had a great Ironman yet. I'm better at the half, but I'm in about 11 hours. I can probably get down to around 10 flat if I was, you know, really well trained. But even then, you've got pros that are doing it in under 8. So, you know, I'm still getting my ass kicked by pros. So,
yeah.
10 hours.
It's a long day. And remember, you just don't stop moving for 10 hours. Imagine the guy doing it in 17.
Yeah, that's not for me.
I don't think that's for me either. But definitely more power to you because
God bless you, man.
Yeah, seriously. Work. You know, you're obviously you work hard and you know. So I know you know it's difficult with the architecture and stuff. Like, but what is your like career path going forward? You know, now that obviously you have that. You know, that difficulty with, you know, some of the short term and the math. Are you looking to go down any other kind of career path?
I haven't quite got that figured out yet. We're still trying to figure out if it is even possible for me to work again. Because I've got a few things going against me. I can't multitask. I have trouble remembering directions or instructions. You know, having the trouble with math. I have vision issues. So I've got a lot of stuff that it's like, you know, we don't know if I'll actually be able to return to a normal, you know, normal employment. So we're trying to figure that out now with rehabilitation specialists and seeing what we do from there. Because, you know, no matter what I'm doing with the YouTube and the, you know, the advocating stuff and awareness, it's not an actual job. And, you know, I have some help doing this and outsource some things. And it's just, thanks.
that's live TV, folks. That's live right there. Yeah.
Oh but man,
we'll see if I you know I'll be able to. There's a lot of stuff, and you know, like re-educating myself with college is difficult because I got hurdles I got to be able to overcome, and we'll see if I can get there.
Well, you know, obviously, you know, best of luck to you.
Yeah, we wish you all the best, man.
We hope that the rehabilitation, you know, improves everything. I mean, it's been what three years, you know, so it's technically, you know, a short amount of time since the accident. So, you know, I'm sure with a couple more years, you know, something will definitely improve with more rehabilitation and, you know, obviously the best of luck with everything you got going on. Have fun in Miami in a few weeks.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be pretty hot down there, right? It's like beginning of April.
So it'll be hot, but something to keep in mind is that it's called Challenge Miami. The race is actually at Homestead Speedway, which is not glamorous as Miami.
No.
I'm staying at a Super 8, I think.
Oh, nice.
Well, Eric, best of luck, man. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You're an inspiration to a lot of people. If you ever want to come by, you always have a home here on our show. So feel free to come by and the best of luck to you, man.
Yes.
Yeah, I look forward to getting the Jets Bua draft day.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
You're going to boo no matter what. You're not going to cheer anybody.
Hey, I'm just glad the Mets got Lindor from your Indians.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't follow sports as much as I used to anymore once I cut the cord with cable. It's like I used to have ESPN on all the time, and it's like, oh wait, I don't watch it that much anymore. Everything is like news when somebody texts me about it. I'm like, oh wow.
But how much time do you have to watch sports and you know and keep
with
up
all the
on
training?
That stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, you're running half marathons a minimum of 10 hours, and then training all the other days. So.
Well, you can do stuff while you ride the bike indoors, but you may not get through it. It's not like college. If you talk to my friend TJ, it's like, you used to have Sports Center on repeat all day long. I'm like, that was college.
That's all Sports Center is. It's like the same thing every 15 minutes. It's like, okay, I saw this already. So you're really not missing too much when it comes to Sports Center, but at least you could put on some headphones and maybe is there a music of choice real quick before we let you go?
Not really. I have an Alexa in every room, so I just kind of whatever comes to mind. Or
on your runs, like do you?
Oh no! When I run, I don't listen to any music because in a triathlon you can't race with it. So I just got accustomed to never listening to it.
Gotcha.
Got understood.
Awesome, everyone. Espo swim, bike, run. You can find him everywhere, all on social media, on YouTube. You know, go check him out, and he's got very great blogs and great vlogs as well. So thank you very much, Eric, for coming on. And like Rick said, you always have a home here.
Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Thanks, Eric. You too, man.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Man, what an inspiration, man. I mean, dude.
Without a doubt, man.
I didn't want to say it, but I'm like, I'm single and have no kids and I don't get up early and stuff like that. I'm like, I feel like such a like.
Well, okay. I have an excuse.
You have an excuse, but I feel like so
no,
lazy and guilty now. I'm like, oh, man. This guy's running.
Yeah, but he's the same.
It's crazy. It's incredible. But good for him.
He's the same age as me. Yeah. And, he's run.
Well, that's
I don't know, 700 more miles than I have.
Yeah, but yeah, if you guys are interested in triathlons or even you know just listening, you know, watching his YouTube page and you know need some help and feel like you know you need somebody to talk to or at least listen to what he has to say, tune into his show because it's really incredible.
Yeah, I have a feeling the people that are training for triathlons right now are not watching us. They're probably out there.
Yeah.
Running for a few hours and swimming for a few hours.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But I need to where do you go? Do you go to LA Fitness?
No, I go to BQE Fitness, which is here in Woodside. I try to go in the mornings. Like pre-COVID, I was like
A pool there?
No, there was there years ago, like 20 years ago, there was a pool there, but not anymore. But pre-COVID, I was going like every morning and then COVID hits, and then all of a sudden you're home, quarantined, cookies, ham and cheese sandwiches. You know, Popeye's chicken sandwich. And next thing you know, you put on 25 pounds. You're like, what happened? So I'm trying to get back into it now. But I mean, the days of running and stuff like that for me, they're over. I'm just trying to eat better and lift weights. That's what I do.
Yeah. No, I know. I do want to get back into that. Yeah. Because it did feel pretty good. Yeah. Because I remember, you know, when I was doing 5Ks, you know, I did go out there every morning or every other morning and, you know, just going for a run, just, you know, clear my head a little bit.
Yeah.
And I remember going on the vacation and I went to Texas.
Yeah.
And I went to Dallas and I went to Austin and I just one morning I just ran around downtown Austin, you know, by the water there and the bridge and everything. And I was like, you know, it was just so like relaxing. It was like it's crazy. Just you know how I went to like DC and I rode the whole National Mall.
Yeah,
you know,
by the water you ran it.
Rented a bike. No, I rented a bike.
Oh, okay.
City bike, and I just went around the whole National Mall. Or, you know, Washington Monument, whatnot. You know, everything. You know, around the water there and.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just I don't know, it you're just experience things differently.
Yeah.
You know, when you just like you're one with just the outdoors and
we should get somebody on to talk some training, you know, like to training and fitness. Like we should find somebody, we should get somebody in the show to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Anybody like we get a personal trainer or somebody who's like, you know, into fit, you know, like I said, somebody who's you know, can show us the ropes on that, and that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So, a little bit of news and notes. So,
yes,
yesterday, John McClane, not the John McClane of Die
from
Hard.
Die Hard, not him.
Okay, not Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yeah, okay,
not that one, but the Houston Texans beat writer who's been doing this for 30, 40 years or so.
Okay.
Mr. Houston, as some like to call him, he said that, well, there was rumors that the Eagles called the Texans about a Wentz for Watson type of deal. And he said, no, that definitely did not happen. And he also said that the Texans are not listening to any offers and that Watson is not for sale. But if he is ever going to be traded,
I saw this.
Would be the Jets that he is traded to. So, I mean, he won't go to the Patriots. He won't go to the Dolphins. He won't go to somebody that hurts us. And are they only okaying the Jets because they know that the Jets are a dumpster fire and they don't have to ever worry about them?
Because the Jets obviously are going to give him the best deal. I mean, if you think about it, the Jets right now, Mike, the Jets can give them, three first round picks or four first round picks in the next 2 years. Or let's say they trade Darnold for a low one. But again, here's the concern I have with this is you are going to blow up. In other words, you're going to give up four or five potential starters because these guys are in the first 60 picks of the draft. You're going to give that up for a guy and you still have to build around them, man. There are a lot of holes on this team.
That.
This reminds me of the Carmelo Anthony trade to the Knicks in 2007. The Knicks were on their way to sort of building a team and they blew it up to get this one guy. They went to a couple of playoff appearances. Melo never won the championship. I get that Deshaun Watson's 25 and he's in his prime, but I don't know if you're the Jets that you blow up your draft for this. I am not convinced that you do it. Again, he is not Patrick Mahomes. He's a great player, yes. Is he Patrick Mahomes? No. And I don't know that you do it for him.
Listen, I understand all of your concerns.
Yeah.
But you know, it's still very interesting to hear that Watson's not for sale unless it's the Jets. I mean, that's just weird.
But here's the thing that this does to the Jets.
There are other teams that can.
Yeah, the Raiders are out there. But here's the thing, though. If you're not, because this has put pretty much the league in a holding pattern. So you're the Jets and you're coming up on the draft. Houston is saying we're not trading them, right? Like you got to make a decision between now and April. Either you're sticking with Darnold, you're going to draft a quarterback, right? Because eventually you're still going to have the picks. Like you can't just waste them. So this has to get resolved in the next 2 months. And if they're saying we're not going to trade him, which all these teams do, I think they're just waiting for the mother of all packages. They'll make the deal. But if you're the Jets, do you make the deal? I'm not sure because Salah doesn't want to come into a situation where he gets a star quarterback, but he has nobody else to. Who else is he going to play with? You know what I'm saying?
Well, he still has, he's got Mims. They got a semi decent offensive line.
Yeah.
Well, much better than what Watson's had before. Maybe not wide receiver wise, but
yeah,
I think running back wise, I think he's, the young kids and was it Ty Johnson? What was his name?
Ty Johnson and Josh Adams.
Yeah, like they can do something. Obviously, Frank Gore is probably out the pasture.
I'm done with Frank Gore. I'm done with it.
Well, yeah, I know he's out. He's gone from the Jets for sure. Who else they? Oh, LaMichael Perine should be back. So
yeah. So like I said, we'll see. I mean, look, listen,
it's better than the David Johnson thing that they had going down in Houston.
Well, I mean, look, it's a long off season. It was a long season. Long off season, a lot to go before the draft, so we'll get into it. I wanted to get into this that the Red Sox sent Benintendi to Kansas City in a 3-team deal. This was surprising. I mean, the Red Sox dump,
like just galore. It's
crazy.
All about salary dump.
I mean, they trade Mookie Betts now. Benintendi. I mean, who are they going to field out there? Like, what kind of a team are they going to put out there?
Well, crazy. I was actually talking to our friend, Mr. Andrew Knarr.
Okay.
Who, as you know,
got engaged at Fenway.
Is a big Red Sox fan. Engaged at Fenway Park. He's gonna have to live with that memory this year because that's the only good thing happening at Fenway Park.
Yeah.
At least, obviously he lost with the Chiefs this past weekend. Yeah. Then all of a sudden, a Red Sox team that was already looking, pretty sad as far as prospects for this year, go and trade Benintendi yesterday and, make a 3-team deal with ironically Kansas City and then the Mets. So that's kind of ironic, that Kansas City and, Boston are intertwined like that in his world over there. But Yeah, I mean, the Mets got a prospect out of it, so I'll take it.
Yeah, they'll take it. But I mean, it's I mean, for a team that's a big city team that spends a lot of money,
yeah, they're, you know, they're just
surprising that they're giving off. Yeah. They gave up Mookie Betts and this and Benintendi. It's great. It's incredible.
Yeah, well, they're saying all over the airwaves that, you know, Red Sox fans are going to need to find a hobby between April and September this year because yeah. Baseball's not going to be it. But you know what? They had a run. I mean,
yeah, no, the Red Sox they've had a run for 20 years.
How are the Celtics doing, by the way? Because I know the Patriots shit the bed. Red Sox season's over before it started.
Yeah. How the Celtics doing? Boston is starting. You know, it's funny you mentioned that because now the city of Boston is starting. It's starting to fall apart a bit here.
The crumble.
Let's go. Yeah, let's take a look. The Boston's. Let me just take a look at the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics right now, they are 13-11, third in the Atlantic Division.
All right. So they're still players.
Yeah, they're still competitive. They're still
players. I mean, obviously they got what's his face. Can't remember.
They got Jason Tatum on that team. Yes.
Yeah, Tatum. Yeah.
So yeah, they got, you know, and they got what's this, the coach, Brad Stevens over there. Danny Ainge is the GM. So yeah. They're always competitive. But you're right, man. All of a sudden, I mean, the Celtics are. You know, I don't know what the Bruins are doing. I haven't really kept up much with them. But like Boston, all of a sudden, you know, the Patriots. It's funny when a dynasty falls, whether it's football, baseball, it's pretty rapid, right? Mm-hmm. Patriots don't make the playoffs. They have no players. People are—they're saying they're washed up. They're done. All of a sudden, the Red Sox are trading guys.
Yeah,
it's all of a sudden falling apart. Boston, Kyrie left, you know, a year ago, whatever it is. Now they got Tatum, but you know, the 13-11. We'll see. All of a sudden, it seems like, you know, they're gonna take a step back. Like all of a sudden, the city of Boston, yeah. Sports wise, after 20 years of just like championships and success, are starting to pull back a little bit, and it's gonna be interesting to see how they're able to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they've dealt with 90-year droughts or whatever it was, 70-something. Yeah. I mean, it was 86 between World Series, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. But they had a couple of those Patriots wins before that. But, you know, I mean, I remember that 2004, you know, breaking yeah. curse, like kind of like that. I kind of like that year.
No, I'm
that
sure was, you do. I'm sure you that. Do.
That was fun to watch.
Yeah,
By
the way, I just wanted to make a note of this. NFL memes, who on this show, we love NFL memes. Whoever created NFL memes, God bless them. So the latest post that they just put up, are you ready for this?
Okay.
So Tom Brady's daughter has held the Super Bowl trophy more times than the Cowboys have won playoff games in 20 years. And she's 8 years old. I mean, these guys are just incredible, man. They are incredible with what they do. I mean, they just rag on that. That's got to be somebody who hates the Cowboys because all they do is rag on the Cowboys. Uh-huh. But like,
well, did you see the other one the other day?
Which one was that one?
The only way Tom Brady doesn't win another Super Bowl, and it's Tom Brady wearing his Cowboys uniform.
Oh, I saw that one. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, they're just incredible. They're incredible.
Did you see the other one? I don't know if it was NFL memes or if it was somebody else, but it was ranking the NFC East quarterbacks and their passing yards in the playoffs.
And you got they might have been them.
You had Heinicke with like 300 and something.
Yeah.
And then underneath him was Dak Prescott with like 100 and something.
Yeah,
and then you had Wentz with 3 yards and Daniel Jones with 0 yards. You know, as far as like, you know, top performing NFC East quarterbacks in the last 5 years or whatever.
Yeah,
and I was like, damn, Heinicke just got an extension too.
Yeah, he got 2 years, $8.5 million.
Yeah, go for it, man.
Well, listen, they're hedging their bets, man. I mean, they're hedging their bets. And then I guess finally, you know, spring training starts and they're reporting, pitchers and catchers. This is the early sign of the spring coming along. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited for that. I'll tell you right now, the Yankees report February 17th. So next week, pitchers and catchers report, and then February 22nd, spring training starts for them. For the Mets, it's actually Friday, February 19th. So next week.
Okay.
And then February 2nd, they all start. I mean, for the most part, February 22nd and 23rd are the dates where most teams will be full squad. So it's exciting, man. You got the NBA coming down the wire now. Gonna hit the All-Star break and then get ready for the playoffs, which should be really exciting. Here in New York, it's gonna be exciting. You got the Nets, who are probably gonna be the team coming out of the East, and you got a young Knicks team who's playing tough. They're 11-15, they're playing tough. You know, but they got some budding young stars with Obi and RJ, Quigley. They just traded for D Rose. So good things to come for the Knicks in the next 40 games or so. And I'm excited to see it, man. I hope we can go to a game, man. I want to see if we can get to a game and just kind of check that out. That should be fun.
Yeah, no. And I thought they changed this up, but I'm looking at, you know, MLB important dates. I thought they changed this up and they weren't going to do the Yankees anymore, but August 12th, the Field of Dreams game back on for White Sox Yankees. I thought it was going to be White Sox.
Oh, in Iowa. Yeah.
And I thought it was supposed to be like White Sox and Brewers or something.
No, Yankees are involved in that. But
yeah, they were originally. And then they changed it up because of
COVID.
And I think they canceled it altogether, but no, I guess it's back on. So yeah, you know, obviously it's not the Field of Dreams. You know, they built a new field, but it's still right. You know, pretty damn cool. We should do a show like ranking, you know, baseball movies and football movies and
Bull Durham is the greatest. Bull Durham. So my Bull Durham, the Bad News Bears, and Major League, top three movies.
Major League is a great one.
Major League is great. Major League 2 sucked. It was Major League was fine. Major League 2 sucked, but my top three are Bull Durham.
Marbles.
Yeah. Bull Durham, the Bad News Bears, both the Bad News Bears, Breaking Train, the one where they go to Houston, that's Bad News Bears, Breaking Training, and then the original Bad News Bears with Walter Matthau, and then Major League.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you know, I hate to say this, I have not seen The Natural with Robert Redford. I might watch that. But I haven't really watched that one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go on a little bit of a – I think a lot of them are on Netflix. I'm going to go on a little bit of a Netflix dive here and there. But, you know, I'm a big fan of the ones that I saw growing up, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
The Rookie of the Years.
Rookie of the Year was a good one.
Rookie of the Year. Major League was fun.
Yeah, John Candy was in that Rookie of the Year movie. That was a great one. He was the announcer.
Yeah. And then fucking Daniel Stern. He was locked in the fucking cage and whatnot. And inside the hotel.
Yeah.
In between the two rooms, getting locked in there.
Great.
No, that was and I think what's his face? Busfield. Like he was one of like the directors or something of that too.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but those are, I mean, baseball wise, those are the three greatest baseball. What other baseball movies are out there? I can't think of any off the top of my head right now.
Well, I love Field of Dreams. I don't know.
I've never seen it. 30-something years, I've never seen that movie. For some reason, it never, you know, I don't know what it was. It never caught my, just to watch it. I'll watch it one of these days, though, now that I've said that. And people are like, what the hell? Yeah. I'll watch it.
And fucking Kevin Costner just like, stars in sports movies
he did Bull Durham and Field of Dreams. I mean,
yeah,
the two of the greatest films
and Draft Day.
You
know, that's football, obviously.
Yeah,
you know what, Moneyball is a good one too.
Moneyball, I have not seen it.
You gotta see Moneyball.
I have not seen Moneyball.
You know, obviously it's more recent and obviously about, you know, all those things that you love.
Yes.
Analytics.
Oh my God. Analytics is ruining my life. I hate analytics. I can't stand analytics.
No, it's a fun one. I like Moneyball. Yeah. But no, I, you know, obviously sports movies, you know, there's some really good ones and some pretty shitty ones. You know, you just got to weed through them. But yeah, you should definitely check out Moneyball and Field of Dreams. But we should have like a episode like, you know, about, you know, just like our rankings and stuff.
Our rankings of the greatest sports movies of all time.
Yeah, and you know, maybe like, you know, like a little like a snake draft, maybe have a couple of people on and like a snake draft, you know, draft up, you know,
something like that.
Sports movies or the best
in like, the summer when things are kind of like dying down, we could do that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We should have like some kind of like game shows and stuff like that. You know, make it fun, but maybe that's going to be more towards when we're at locations or something.
Yeah.
But all right.
All right. Well, it's a 3-day weekend. Happy President's Day, Mr. President. If you're out there watching, I know you're busy, but if you're watching, happy President's Day on Monday. And to all our presidents, happy President's Day.
Yes. Not for me. I will be at work on Monday.
Oh, I will be waking up late, my friend.
Yeah, yeah, you do that.
Hey, listen.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Absolutely.
Enjoy no football on Sunday. And it's the beginning of...
To touch on that real quick, I got to say, I'm sad that football season is over. I'm kind of glad now. I feel like I'm liberated. I'm not stuck in my TV from 9 to 8 o'clock at night, you know. Mm-hmm. Enjoy a Sunday. Maybe go to Walmart, take a drive out, you know. So enjoy your Sunday, everybody.
Yeah, Walmart. That's
well, yeah. You know, or ShopRite, Target.
Why don't you just go for like a 6-mile run and practice for an Ironman?
Not happening. No, I'd rather walk around ShopRite. I'm good with that.
Okay. All right. You if that's what floats your boat.
Yeah, that's exactly what floats my boat.
Yep. Oh man. Okay. All right, everyone. Have a great night.
Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Peace. Bye-bye. See you next Tuesday.